They came to mind because Ashura has come. So commonly we find in Ashura and throughout the year like that, but especially Ashura time, many people ask the question, we took a mannat, we took a nadhar, we took a vow. Especially women now, they do this quite often. Like this morning also we had some mudhakara after Fajr, where for my daughter's nikah, my son's business, or they can't have kids, the woman 40k, mannat. Right, dear Allah, this happens or that happens, whatever, or we won't eat certain item of food, or we won't do this, or we will do this, etc. But they take all these type of mannats, what do you call them? A vow, an oath, nadhar, is called, Arabic is called nadhar, in Urdu also, nadhar or a yameen. So they don't know the rules and the laws and regulations in regards to all these mannats. So just read quickly through this, said about this today, but we just read through it so we understand when it comes to mannat and nadhar, what it means. When it comes to taking a yameen, an oath, when you take an oath in Sharia, then different words we use. Wallahi, billahi, tallahi, by the qasam of Allah. By the qasam of Allah, right? The qasam of Quran Sharif. Now take a qasam upon one's parents, upon my children, said valid. By the qasam of my daughter, qasam of my mother, not valid. In fact, so the Iksir ulama say this can be tantamount to shirk. This qasam is only taken in the name of Allah. So many times people say this type of qasams and they hold on to it for years sometime, but not valid. So here in this short article, we'll just read through it quickly, is mentioned at the outset, we wish to explain the concepts of nadhar and yameen. The word nadhar in Quran Sharif also, in the story of Isa alayhi salatu wasalam's mother, when his granny took the nadhar and she said, inni nadhartu laka ma fi batni muharraran fataqabbal minni. Took a nadhar to Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala that, ya Allah, whatever I am carrying within my womb, then it'll be muharraran, this child will be free for the khidmat of deen, for the deen of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Fataqabbal minni. إنك أنت السميع العليم يا الله, you're all hearing, all knowing. فلما وضعتها, when she did give birth, قالت ربي إني وضعتها أنثى. So Allah, you gave birth to a female. And that was the mother of Isa عليه الصلاة والسلام. But she already took the vow. She took the mannat already. That this child will be free for the deen of Allah تبارك وتعالى. That Allah تعالى mentioned سورة الكهف. وَذْكُرُ فِي الْكِتَابِ مَرْيَمْ. That remember in the kitab of Allah, incident of Maryam radiallahu ta'ala anha, idin tabadat min ahliha makana sharqiyya, when she broke away and she went aloof from her family and she took to the eastern chamber of Masjid al-Aqsa. There she made i'tikaf almost a whole life over there. Then she gave birth to Isa alayhi salatu wasalam. So she took a nadhar to, the word in Quran is nadhar to, nadhar, to take a vow. So at the outset we wish to explain the concept of nadhar and yameen and clarify the difference between the two. Nadhar is generally translated as a vow, which a woman take and took another, took a mannat, is a vow. In the English language, according to the Sharia, nadhar refers to the obligation of a permissible act, the obligation, you make a permissible act obligatory upon yourself. So obligation of a permissible act by a Muslim obligated to observe the teachings of Sharia upon himself. Listen again. According to the Sharia, nadhar means, refers to the obligation of a permissible act by a Muslim upon himself. That if so and so thing happens, then I make this certain action wajib and compulsory upon myself. So nadhar consists of two types. First one, direct obligation of an act of ibadah. Direct obligation of an act of ibadah. Example, a person takes a vow that he will fast for 3 days. Arabic, the wording is lillahi alayya. Lillahi, for the sake of Allah, alayya, I make wajib and compulsory upon myself that I will fast for 3 days. Example. So it's a direct obligation. It's not suspended to any occurrence. So he just says this now, that I will fast for 3 days for the pleasure of Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. Valid. The second type is obligation of an act of ibadah, dependent on the happening of an event. If so and so thing happens, then I will fast for 3 days. This is common now. My daughter gives a good proposal, then I'll give so much of charity. Or I'll distribute so many apples in Muharram. Distribute it in apples in Muharram. Or bananas, what this? Huh? Apples. Alright. So, you take mannat like that now. So this obligation of an act of ibadah, so the first one is a direct obligation. Where the person takes his mannat, they take the nadar, and they say, for the sake of Allah, I make compulsory upon myself that I will fast for 3 days. Or I make compulsory upon myself that I will read 10 rakats nafil salah. Valid. But the important thing is now, it will come ahead also, that which you are making compulsory upon yourself is a direct ibadat. Alright, there are conditions at what you can make compulsory upon yourself. Alright, so the first one is said is a direct obligation, mannat. Second type of mannat, the obligation of an act of ibadah, depending on the happening of an event. If so and so thing happens, then I will do so and so ibadat. As you mentioned now, if my daughter falls pregnant, then I will give so much of charity. Or if my son gets married, daughter gets a good proposal, then I will read so many rakats nafil salah. That's the second type of mannat and nadhar. Example they give here, a person takes a vow that if a certain wish or work of his is fulfilled, he will perform 10 rakats of salah. That's valid also. Once he has made the mannat, the vow, in the first circumstance, direct obligation, for the sake of Allah, for the pleasure of Allah, I will perform 10 rakat salah, not suspended, not linked to any occurrence. So once he made the vow in the first circumstance, and his wish or work is fulfilled in the second instance. Alright, the second type was when we say mu'allaq bishart in Arabic, suspended, linked to a certain precondition. If this work is done, then I will give charity. If this work is done, then I read salah. So the first one is once he has made the vow that he will perform so many rakat salah. The second instance, if his work is done or his wish is fulfilled, it will be compulsory upon him to carry out the act of ibadah on condition that the conditions mentioned here under are found. Paulo, you're not getting confused now, right? It's conditions about conditions now, right? So once he's taken it, for the sake of Allah, I'm going to perform 10 rakat salah. Already is wajib upon him. He must do it as soon as possible. But if he says, if I pass my examinations, right, madrasa exam, then I will perform 10 rakat salah, and report came that he passed. So now he has to perform it. Now they say, these things are also linked to certain conditions. When will he fulfill these 10 rakat salah in our example? So number one, they say the ibadah should resemble a compulsory act. The ibadah that he made obligatory upon himself. That if certain thing happens, oh, I make compulsory upon myself to do a certain ibadah. But that ibadah which he makes obligatory upon himself should resemble a compulsory act. I'll explain to you. Example, one can vow that he will perform 2 rakat salah as it resembles the obligatory 5 times salah. Or I will keep a roza because that resembles the month of Ramadan. Or I will give sadaqah, resembles zakat. Or I will go for hajj, resembles a farz hajj. But he says now that better if you pass your exams, I'm taking you holiday. And he passed, Abba is farz now, wajib, you have to take me. No, taking holiday is not farz, that wajib, not sunnat also. Understand? He has to be such an ibadah that resembles a compulsory act. The second point, it should be an actual and direct act of ibadah. It should be an actual and direct act of ibadah. What does it mean? Example, so maybe a direct, it mustn't be an ibadah that's, what do you say, dhimnan, a by the way ibadah. Example, one cannot vow that he will make wudu. Wudu is not a direct. It's an ibadah because of certain a'mal that are direct ibadah. The precondition is you need taharat and wudu. So nobody is wudu the whole day and getting sawab. But you're making wudu to perform salah, to read Quran. Understand? So you can't say now that if I pass my examinations, then I'll make 10 times wudu. They say by you're wasting water. You don't. In fact, that type of nadar and mannat will not be binding. Because that ibadah that you made compulsory upon you, an actual and direct act of ibadah. So one cannot vow that he will make wudu. Example, azan also. Right, he say, I'll give azan. He takes a mannat now. That if my name comes out of a hajj, then I'll give azan in the haram of Makkah. Now he came out. Now he goes, you know, request to the MBS. They have to give the azan in the haram. I took a mannat, say, Mubarak to you. You can give it in your backyard, no problem. Your mannat will be, mannat will not be even compulsory upon him because it's a direct ibadah. Azan is for salah. So he says, wuzu, as it is only a prerequisite for salah and not a direct ibadah in itself. Nobody just makes wudu for no reason. You make it now for a certain act of ibadah. So two conditions. If one, and also the third one they say, at that specific time, that ibadah is not farz upon him also. For example, he says now that if this delivery now comes before Zohar, then for the sake of Allah, I'm reading Zohar today. Zohar you have to read anyway. So you can't think mannat or farz ibadah that I'm going to perform my namaz. I'm going to keep the month of Ramadan or Roza. If one does not fulfill his vow, he will be committing a great sin. So that is another commonly which we take. Now some people might take, see Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, after Asr usually every day, he used to go visit Azwaj al-Mutahharat. Where right now, the Qabr Mubarak of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam is, that was outside the Haram. It was outside the Haram Sharif. Then, years after that, one of the kings now, one of the rulers, included that outside, they broke the entire walls, etc., what was there. Then they put three walls around it over a period of time, and they became part of the masjid. But that time, if you to make salat and salam, you to exit the masjid and go outside and make salat and salam. Now it's already part of the masjid. So that entire area there were all the houses of Azwaj al-Mutahharat, all were in a line. Right? So Aisha's house and Fatima's house and Hazrat Sauda and the rest of them, all were there. Only Hazrat Hafsa radiallahu anha's house was in front of the haram, so to say. Right? If you're walking down Babul Salam, Babul Baqi, you find on the right hand side there's like a window open there. Right, but you won't really notice it because you got all the calligraphy. They see an opening over there. I think they put a camera there now. There was a window to the house of Umar bin Khattab radiallahu ta'ala anhu. There was a gutter there. Alright, so one house is Hafsa's house was there. So after Asr, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam to visit all the Azwaj al-Mutahharat. So as Zainab radiallahu ta'ala anha, she wanted Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam to spend more time baha. So she's to make a type of a drink to keep him longer. So Hazrat Aisha radiallahu anha and Hazrat Safiya radiallahu anha, they came to know about this. So Hazrat Aisha told Hazrat Safiya radiallahu anha, what we'll do is, we know Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam is very sensitive about smell, bad smell. When he comes to me, I'll ask him, what's the smell on your breath? And when he comes to you, we'll ask him also. Because we know now that he's drinking something at her house. So she's keeping him longer. So when he comes, we'll ask him, so what he'll do now, he might not say anything and he won't drink it again tomorrow. He'll cut it out and he'll come quicker. So when he came to Aisha's house, radiallahu anha, so she asked Nabi of Allah, what's that scent on your breath? He didn't say anything. Then the second time he was asked, then the drink, he made it haram upon himself. He made it haram that I will never drink it, but the qasam of Allah, I won't drink it again. Then Surah Tahrim was revealed, Ya Ayyuhan Nabiyu, Lima tuharrimu ma ahallallahu lak. O Nabi of Allah, why do you make haram what Allah has made halal for you? Why do you make it? تَبْدَغِي مَرْضَاتَ أَزْوَاجِكَ When you please your wives, when you please them and displease Allah, Allah made it halal, you can't make it haram. Why I'm saying this? Sometimes now, some women or some men, they make certain things haram upon themselves or upon their children in a form of a mannat also. Let's see, we're not going to eat this thing over here because you want certain thing to happen. Not permissible. Nabi of Allah was rebuked before because of that. So these things we're going to learn our Sharia and advise the people at home because many people here now, these people asking questions, I took this type of mannat, this type of yameen or nadar or vow or an oath, that we're not going to eat a certain type of dish or certain type of whatever it may be now, right, until the certain thing has to happen. So these things are incorrect. So that basically was another, what nadar means in Sharia, then we come to yameen. Yameen is generally translated as an oath or a promise in the English language. Here we get three types also. Right? They come to the Quran, you get Yameen Ghamus, Yameen Mun'aqida, Yameen Laghu. All you see we teach in Darul Ulum now is all technical things, but we quickly will just Read through it so you'll understand more or less. The definition of yameen in Sharia is to give assurance to an affair, to an act, to give assurance to an affair or to an act by mentioning either the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala or one of the attributes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that I will do a certain thing by the qasam of Allah. You're giving assurance of a certain act by taking the name of Allah, one of the attributes of Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. Yameen could be used to assure an affair that took place in the past. Say by the qasam of Allah, billahi, wallahi, tallahi, it happened like that. Why I did it? So giving assurance that the act did happen. Example, the defendant takes an oath in court and the plaintiff cannot provide witnesses. So the defendant now, then he takes an oath by the qasam of Allah, it was like this, or it wasn't like that. Or give assurance to do or refrain from an action in the future. A person takes an oath that he will not smoke in the future, for example. Or even do a haram act. He said, by the qasam of Allah, I will not do it again. Now, what are the repercussions? When he mustn't do it, or if he says he will do a certain good act, here also now, a person might say, person loses his temper. Right? And now he is one way, his tajweed is moving now. He says, qasam, qasam, I'll kill you. Now all the customs he took now, he is involved now. Alright? You say by the qasam of Allah, I'm going to catch you, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. They say, I took the qasam, now I'm going to fulfill it. No, bhai. He said, no, do him a favor, make him a shaheed. No, bhai. Hadith Sharif say, a person takes a qasam of something which is impermissible, or not good, then he should break the qasam. He should break the qasam and pay the kafara. He can't go through it. He can't fulfill it. He has to abandon it. We'll see what they say in regards to this now. Or he gives assurance to do or refrain from an action in the future. Example, a person takes an oath that he will not smoke in the future. And now they find commonly boys also get involved, girls get involved. They engaged. Well, there's no engagement. They propose to get married. Right? And then they say, right, we're not talking anymore. Take a promise now. Qasam, we're not finished now. No more contact. Then, 1-2 weeks, he goes and he says, I slipped up, but I took a qasam, I'm not going to do it. Now you got to pay the kafara now. Now you're involved now. So you got to fulfill it. When a person takes an oath upon the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to do or refrain from something in the future, it will be incumbent upon him to fulfill that oath. Alright. Like recently, somebody sent also a query. But they weren't sure the words they used. Alright. So each one's implications are different. How you worded it, how you said it, what you made compulsory upon yourself. So it's very particular how you worded it, so we know how to give the answer. If it's uncertain, they will say, leave it out. Don't worry about it. There has to be certain what he said, how he said it, took the name of Allah Tabarak. Now before, as I say, before we should take qasam, right, in all different ways. Before they say, jitni baal, jitni guna. How much hair on my head, that's much guna, qasam, I'm taking qasam on my hair. Qasam on my daughter's life. Not valid. Is that permissible? So the specific way how to take the qasam. So when he does not fulfill and he breaks the oath, it will be compulsory upon him to give the kafara for misusing the name of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. So what is the first one? He has this tartib and this sequence. If he breaks it, right, then he has to free a slave. Not applicable to us because there are no slaves right now. The second thing, if you can't free a slave, then you feed 10 poor people and average 2 meals. So you will call 10 people zakat recipients. Muslims that are zakat recipients, and feed them 2 meals. If you can't feed them, then you should clothe 10 poor people, enough clothes to cover the majority of their bodies. Also zakat recipients, you should clothe them. If one cannot do any one of the above 3 for valid shari'i reason, then he may fast for 3 consecutive days. So this, tartib and the sequence, if you can't, then number 2, number 3, number 4. The feeding and clothing should be of moderate standard, the feeding and clothing. One can feed or clothe 10 people, one can feed or clothe 10 people in one day, or one poor person for 10 days. Give 10 days, Dawat must come every day for lunch. For 10 days you feed him. One cannot feed one person 10 times in one day. You get some clever sometime. You have to make a plan. Jepo da masla. It won't work. Feeding, one can either give one person So when you say feeding in Sharia, it was sadaqatul fitr amount. You got to feed him equivalent to sadaqatul fitr amount. That time was a lot. Sadaqatul fitr amount was a large amount of money. Now it's about how much? 30 rand, 35 rand. So one can either give each poor person one sa'. One sa' is 3.20 kilograms. 3.20 kilograms of dates. Not 300, now 3.20. So this is over 3 kilos of khajur. You give 10 people. Just that, it's done. Alright? Or barley, or half a sa', which is 1.6 kilos of wheat. Or you can feed them 2 meals a day, lunch and supper. Only bread can be counted as a meal on condition that it is made out of wheat. It's all a specific masail now. They're not barley. A child who has just started eating, now what he wants to do is to feed 10 babies. Alright, it will come out cheap. They say a child who has just started eating will not be counted as one person. Won't be counted as one, it must be proper, the child who can eat properly. One can either call the poor people home and feed them, or one can give them food for them to take as they like. You can make them sit, feed them here, or you can make the, what do you call it, you know, the provision, pack it for them. Like pack it and give it to them. And you can feed them in that way. One person asked me some time ago, also he had to pay. And I said, well, I want to feed them, I don't have the space. He said, tell them come Friday night, Hilal. Organize a pot for them. Call them over 2 Fridays. So you come Shab Guzari too. And they'll come also. So benefit for them. When it comes to clothing, any type of clothing can be given that normally covers the body, and the person wearing it will not be counted as naked or half naked. That amount of clothing you must give him. One should also bear in mind that clothing a woman will not be complete unless it includes something that will cover her head, the scarf. Then that will be sufficient to clothe her. Giving only trousers will not be counted as clothing a person. He might think now, he wants to go bare minimum. So he knows the masla. That between the navel and the knee, aura is covered, you carry, technically you carry salah like that. He said, I clothed him. Enough to perform salah. He said, no. He said, he got it to be as semi-naked. So enough to cover him completely. Clothes don't necessarily have to be new. Old clothes can also be given on condition they last for 3 months. He has some old kurtas now, right? Got 10 sets of kurtas there. He said, I better give that away. Then it's done. As long as it lasts for 3 months at least. Besides the above mentioned general definition of yameen, which is an oath vow, there are certain other statements which will be regarded as yameen. A few of them are listed here under. A person takes a vow but does not mention the vow. Takes a vow but doesn't mention the vow. For example, he says, I take a nadar upon Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I take a nadar. I take a mannat upon Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. That's all he says. Such a nadar will be regarded as yameen, and the person will have to give the kafara of breaking an oath. He didn't finish it. He just said, I take a nadar upon Allah. What is it? Binding. Why is binding? Quran says, لا تجعلوا الله عرضة لأيمانكم. Don't make the name of Allah a target of your promises and your oaths. Don't just use it. Wallah, wallah, wallah. Bad habit. People have that habit now. Wallahi. Marana wallahi. Is that a play word to take the name of Allah? Allah's name is something great. You don't just play with Allah's name. Now, among the Arabs, it's very common. That is said. Now, our people sometimes, they pick up this habit. Alright? He'll be binding upon you. Now, if you're going to pay the kafara thereafter. So what he says upon me, what the words are, he says, I take a nadar upon Allah. I take a vow upon Allah. Or I take a mannat upon Allah, then he'll have to give the kafara for it. But although he has no niyat also, but he said the words, just the word is sufficient. You see, there are three things in Sharia. There are 3 things in Sharia. They say, jidduhunna jiddun wa hazluhunna jiddun. That his seriousness is serious, and his play also is serious. Talaq. Play also, it'll fall. Right? Talaq. Taking another also. Taking a vow, play, you say it, it'll happen. It'll be binding. And freeing a slave. One tells the slave, I free you. I start playing with you. The slave is gone. It's free immediately. So certain things in Sharia that even just in jest and play is still binding. A person takes a vow of carrying out an impermissible act. As I mentioned now, he says, I'll kill you. Example, he says, I take a vow that I will kill a certain person. Such another will also be treated as yameen, and the person will have to give the kafara of breaking an oath. Right, we have to pay the kafara to get out of this promise of his. In the light of the above mentioned, the agreement you made, that's a fatwa, mana is, after answering person to okay, yameen or another. So basically, this is it now. Alright, it's quite technical, but we understand it more or less now. So when it comes to family members, sometimes they will take manlat, they will take yameen, make a promise, etc. So they've got to be careful. First of all, the words they are using, and whether they are taking an oath of a permissible act or impermissible act. Should it be just now in jest and play? And also, ulama say, they say that taking a manlat does not change the decree of Allah, doesn't influence the decree of Allah. Then you get reward. The mannat should be only to please Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. Allah, if certain thing happens, then I will keep roza, whether Allah ta'ala does it or not. It's only for the pleasure of Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. So you don't find this so commonly among sahaba ikram that they took this type of mannats and all that. What they did, they made dua. And we send the post also, as the time he says, rahmatullah alayhi, that if you want something from Allah, he says, continue making dua till Allah gives it to you. Now we make dua and then we stop. He says, no, you must continue. Continue and continue till Allah Ta'ala gives it to you. Allah Ta'ala ordered, make dua to me, I will answer your call. So now people are hasty, so they're going to do all these things. Take a mannat now, give so much in charity, we feed so many people, we do so much, so much. These are all the takalluf and formalities. Person makes his life difficult thereafter. Allah Ta'ala decrees, yes, we take out sadqah. We take out sadqah now. What we say in our term, we're holding Allah ransom now. I bring this now, ya Allah, you must do my job. Allah will do it also. Why not? That is there. But our job is servitude, abdiyat, to be slaves of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Allah ta'ala give us tawfiq to make amal and to understand these concepts of sharia, inshallah. We continue from our kitab for the last time, inshallah, what we read. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. The last time we discussed about Haji Imdadullah Muhajir Makki Rahmatullahi Alayhi. Sometimes the names are so long, we don't know which is the name actually. Alright, so the name that I mentioned right now, what was his real name? Imdadullah. Haji was a Haji. Imdadullah. Muhajir means he made hijrat. How he had Muhajirin. Muhajir Makki. He was Muhajir Makki, meaning he made hijrat to Makkah Mukarrama from India. So his name was Haji Imdadullah, who was the Shaykh of Hazrat Nanotvi, Hazrat Qasim Nanotvi, Shaykh Ahmed Gangohi Rahmatullah Ali, and Hazrat Tamir Rahmatullah Ali. That's the all bi'ah to him, but he wasn't a qualified alim, so to say, formal alim, but he was way beyond that. Understand? So all our kabir were bad to him, and then towards the end of his life, his life came out in the Haram of Makkah thereafter. That time, there were little rooms. At the bottom of the haram, they had like an underground area there. So he had one room over there. And his life came out in the muhabbat of Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. That he had to leave India because of the pressure of the British. Alright, this we didn't read last week. So we'll just go through it quickly just to appreciate. As I mentioned now, our silsila, our chain, right? Whether it's Chisti, Qadiri, Suhar Wardi, and Naqshbandi, all links up to Haji Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. All go through him, then goes right up to Hazrat Ali, Hassan Basri, Hazrat Ali radiallahu ta'ala anhu. So we'll read about him. He passed away in 1317 AH. 1317, so they got Hazrat Haji Imdadullah Sahib Faruqi Chisti Makki. But sometimes we hear it, we say now, which side now this is? That side now we see sometimes Abu Qadiri. Okay, this is another group this. So we also Qadiri. You also Faruqi, you also Chisti Makki, but all is bid'at. That's why Hazrat Kimsa would say, Rahmatullah Alayhi, that we may shukr to Hazrat Tamir Rahmatullah Alayhi, that what he did was that he ratified and he cleared out our silsila of the Sawuf completely. It were all bid'at. There were bid'at the day before. There were sometimes the Qawali, there was there, people going to trance and different things. All that he took it out. And Hazrat Kimsa would say that Hazrat Tamir Rahmatullah Alayhi made our Sawuf mudallal. Mudallal means that he extracted it from Hadith and Quran. Whatever we do is from Hadith and Quran Sharif. So general introduction about Hazrat Haji Sahib, Haji Imdadullah Sahib Faruqi, Chisti Makki, Rahmatullah Alayhi. So Hazrat Haji Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh was one of the signs of Allah of the last century. If you study his life, you will learn that it had the effect of an ajib and wonderful effect on the people. Anyone who was blessed to serve him was turned into pure gold. His spiritual blessings continue to this day among the Arabs and the non-Arabs. There's probably no Islamic alim in the Indian subcontinent who does not have a creedal bond, tasawwuf bond with him. The matchless achievements of eminent ulama, such as Hazrat Gangohi, Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi Rahmatullah Alayh, Maulana Muhammad Qasim Saab, Nanuti Rahmat, who was the founder of Darulum Dioban, the Maulana Muhammad Yaqub Saab Nanuti Rahmatullah Alayh, Hazrat Thanwi Rahmatullah Alayh, Maulana Abdul Rahim Saab Raipuri Rahmatullah Alayh, the Maulana Mahmud Hassan Saab Diobandi Rahmatullah Alayh, the Maulana Hussain Ahmad Badani Rahmatullah Alayh, serve as continuous rewards to the present day for the spiritual blessings of Hazrat Haji Saab Rahmatullah Alayh. After the failure in the battle for independence in India, right, they lost the jihad against the British in 1857. So after they lost the battle, the Muslim Ummah had become disorganized. Power and government were taken away from the Muslims, and economic control had now gone completely into the hands of the foreign rulers. A fall in livelihood, economic decline, and material poverty had become their lot. The foreign political power had laid a new web, and a flood of the new culture flowed freely. This is the British. Consequently, those moral, spiritual, and social values which Islamic thought had accomplished were starting to flow away like grass and straw. The standard of education and the syllabi were being altered. Akbar Ilahabadi makes reference to this in the following couplet. We now believe such books to be worthy of memorizing, which after reading them, a son considers his father to be deranged. That's what happened that time in India. Listen again. He says, we now believe such books to be worthy of memorizing, which after reading them, a son considers his father to be deranged. Something wrong with my father. Most youngsters think that also. What's wrong with my father? They're letting me go out. Stopping me from this. Stopping. What's wrong with the old man? So he says, that what became the time in India. Everything changed. It was during this period that a dervish and a Sufi sleeping on a straw mat, wearing a loincloth, residing in Thana Bhavan, district of Muzaffar Nagar, who solely had a loincloth referring to a lungi. That's what the Zulus are wearing. We're talking about the lungi. So, sleeping on a straw mat, wearing a lungi, residing in Thana Bhavan, the district of Muzaffar Nagar, who solely out of religious self-respect and for Allah Ta'ala's sake, joined in the jihad in Shamli in 1857. Shamli, you go to India and Muzaffar Nagar, you still see the boards there. Thana Bhavan, Shamli. So this certain alim or Sufi joined in the jihad in Shamli in 1857 against the British government and also established a rule for the Muslims. Some of his companions were martyred and others were imprisoned by the British. He managed to elude his pursuers, to escape them, and sought refuge in the environs of the Kaabatullah, where he delivered lessons on wisdom and spirituality. Meaning he left India, he came to Baitullah thereafter. Although he was living thousands of miles from this land, India, he was fully aware of the conditions and situations which prevailed here and the miseries which were afflicting the Muslims in their helplessness and anguish. He was a living example of love for Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala and Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and a physical manifestation of contentment, patience, acceptance, submission and reliance. He single-handedly preserved the religious, moral and spiritual capital of his fellow Muslims as though he was a great revolutionary movement and a dynamic organization all by himself. The day after, Hazrat says, it was his teachings who urged his sincere disciples, his murids, to construct a dini fortress like Darul Dioban. He was a thinker, thinking tank behind him, one man, thinking tank. It was his now fuyuz, his the nur of his heart, Allah Ta'ala put in the heart of Mawlana Qasim Sahib Nanuti, Rahmatullah Alayh, that you should start this Darul Ulum. Right over last week, Friday night also, Mawlana Muhammad Ali Sahib Bhopali was here, it is the ulama. So he mentioned also that Qasim Sahib Nanuti Rahmatullah Alayhi saw in his dream Nabi Ali Salatu Salam, and he actually pulled a line there. He says, from this line, you must start your Darul Ulum. When he woke up the next morning, The line was there on the floor. And they started the Darulum. From where the work of teaching and propagation of deen and its preservation spread throughout the subcontinent, the Dawat and Tabligh movement of Mawlana Muhammad Ilyasab Rahmatullah Alayh is in reality a part of the mission of Hazrat Haji Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. Whether it was Tabligh, whether it was Hazrat Tanis Tasawwuf, or the Jihad of Shaykhul Islam, it all now goes up to Haji Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. So Hazrat Haji Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh would sit in front of the Kaabatullah and deliver and have majalis on the Mathnawi of Mawlana Rumi Rahmatullah Alayh. At that time, it already is happening in the majalis. His khulafa are not in India alone. Rather, countless khulafa were conveyed to the Arabian Peninsula, Turkey and North Africa. A new life was injected into the khankas. Those who had become dry and withered in the spiritual training and guidance were re-irrigated, given a new life, and their thirst was quenched. In short, the achievements of Hazrat Haji Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh in the continuation of religious concern, preservation of beliefs, safeguarding against atheism, and in the effectiveness of the heirs of Islamic Sufism are unmatched and unparalleled. He was born on a Thursday, 22nd Safar, 1233, that is January 1818, in the village of his maternal grandmother, his nani, place called Nanota, district Muzaffar Nagar. His paternal grandmother, that is Dadi, was in Thana Bhavan. So between the two places, Nanota and Thana Bhavan. His father's name was Hafiz Muhammad Amin. His father had named him Imdad Hussein. Imdad means to help, to assist. So he called him Imdad Hussein, but after acting under the suggestion of Hazrat Shah Muhammad Ishaq Muhaddis Dehlavi Rahmatullah Alayh, the grandson of Shah Abdul Aziz Muhaddis Dehlavi Rahmatullah Alayh, it was changed to Imdadullah because the name Imdad Hussein had a trace of shirk in it. Right? The Shias, because of Hussein radiallahu anhu, so made it Imdadullah. So why do you call him Faruqi? You find now some Faruqi, some Siddiqi, where these names came from. So he's a Sheikh Faruqi as regards his lineage. The lineage of Hazrat Baba Fariduddin Mas'ud Ganj Shakar Ajudni Pakpatan Rahmatullah Alayh. Now you might hear these names from other majalis. But he's also a Awa Akabir. And Hazrat Imam Rabbani Sheikh Ahmad Sarhindi Rahmatullah Alayh Faruqi meets up with this lineage as well. His mother's name was Bibi Husseini. She was the daughter of Sheikh Ali Muhammad Siddiqui of Nanota, Saharanpur. She passed away in 1240, 1824. Then his education in the Bayat. They say he commenced his early education in Arabic and Persian in his hometown. As per the family tradition, he memorized the Quran Sharif first. But they say in the footnote, based on what is mentioned in Imdadul Mushtaq, he did not commence memorizing the Quran Sharif, but could not complete it at that time. He completed the memorization much later. He turned his attention to the prescribed texts, meaning the kitabs, in 1258, but did not complete his studies. After all, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted to demonstrate the beauty of his Allah bestowed knowledge. We get two types of knowledge. One is ilmi wahabi, one is ilmi kasabi. Ilmi kasabi is a knowledge that you work for, that you study. Kasab means to work, to exert yourself. Like the boys come Daru Ulum, so kasaba yaksibu, so they exert themselves, they study. Based upon that, they learn the masail, hadith, and Quran. And then you get ilmi wahabi. Wahabi ladunni means on the side of Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. Person exerts himself so much in the love of Allah, muhabbat of Allah, ibadat, sits in the company of the ulama ikram, that Allah tabarak wa ta'ala grants him ilm from his side directly. And you find our mashayikh, they move on years, they studied the kitabs. When they start talking now, you'll hear people say, you won't find this in kitabs. This is ilhami. From Allah tabarak wa ta'ala, Allah ta'ala puts in the heart at that moment. Zakim sahib rahimullah, many times this will happen. They just stop all of a sudden. And he will say, ek ilmi azim abi ata farmaya. Allah ta'ala just gave me some great knowledge right now. Then he will open it up. Whole bayan will start on that one point. So the heart were flowing. So Allah ta'ala wanted to show the world. Allah ta'ala has bestowed knowledge upon him directly without now studying kitabs. He always had a special interest in the Mathnavi of Allama Rumi rahmatullah alayh. This was due to the spiritual blessings of elders of his Chishtiya Sabiriya lineage. They were Sabiriya also. Almost all the seniors of this lineage, and especially the lineage which came after Hazrat Shah Muhibbullah Ilahabadi, had made the Mathnavi the special practice. Our other Shaykh was same also. He wrote a commentary on the Mathnavi Sharif, Zakim Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. Then his bayat, Hazrat Haji Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, first pledged bayat to Hazrat Shah Nasiruddin Dehlavi Rahmatullah Alayh in the Naqshbandiya lineage, Silsila. Shaykh Nasiruddin Dehlavi Rahmatullah Alayh was a Khalifa and Murid of the Shah Muhammad Afaq Mujaddidi Rahmatullah Alayh and a student and son-in-law of Mawlana Shah Muhammad Ishaq Muhajir Dehlavi Rahmatullah Alayh. He learned some of the zikrs and du'as of the Naqshbandiya Mujaddidiya path from him. So a narration of Imdad al-Mushtaq states that he was honored with a khirqa and permission. Right? This was mentioned. He was given a khirqa and permission. However, he did not derive benefit from him for long. So during this period that he saw Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam in a dream where he connected his hand to the hand of Miyaji Nur Muhammad rahmatullah alayhi. Who saw this dream? Haji Imdadullah Mahajir Makki. Alright, so he didn't take much benefit from this. Sheikh Nasiruddin. So he saw in his dream the Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam took his hand and put his hand into the hand of Miyaji Nur Muhammad Janjabi rahmatullah alayhi. Miyaji Nur Muhammad. So the Hadith Abu rahmatullah alayhi had never seen Miyaji Nur Muhammad before this dream. Now he saw him in a dream. When he woke up, he spent much time trying to fathom who the saint was in whose hand Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam guided him to pledge bi'at. This condition continued for several years. The Haji Sahib rahmatullah alayhi had learnt the Hisne Haseen, that dua kitab, from Mawlana Muhammad Qalandar Muhaddis Jalalabadi rahmatullah alayhi. The very same Mawlana said to him on one occasion, "Why are you so distressed? Hereby is the village of Lohari where you will find Miyaji Nur Muhammad." So finally, Ustaz told him by who he learned Hisne Haseen du'as. Why look so? I can see spiritually now you got qabz. Qabz means you are constipated. You got spiritual constipation. You're not looking right. Why do you go to Lahari? Miyaji Nur Muhammad is there. Your objective will be realized by him. The Hadith Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi was so eager that he did not even bother about making arrangements for a conveyance. He left Thana Bhawan and reached Lahari in the blistering heat. Hazrat Miyaji rahmatullah alayhi had pledged bi'at for jihad. Hazrat Miyaji Nur Muhammad had pledged bi'at of jihad at the hands of Hazrat Sayyid Ahmad Shah Rai Barelvi rahmatullah alayhi and had received khilafat from Hazrat Sayyid Abdul Rahim Wilayati Fatimi Shaheed rahmatullah alayhi in the Chishtiya lineage. Now, hearing all these things, so we know now that we are connected to all these things. Mujaddidi, Chishti, etc., etc. But as I mentioned, the Thani Rahmatullah Ali cleared up all the things that were found in all these silsilas. So this is a refined lineage which combines knowledge and spirituality. That's the difference. What happens to the Sufis before, they confined themselves to the khanka. So they didn't have proper knowledge. And they began doing the zikrs. A lot of bid'at came in there. That's why our Hazrat Wala also in Azadul, he told Hazrat Hakim Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, Hazrat, I want to open a khanka, make a special khanka. He says, no, don't do that. Leave your khanka part of your Darul Ulum. Because your asatiza, students, will be part of it. And if anything has to be introduced, which is a part of Sharia, they will correct you. So your khanka also will remain upon ilm and remain safe. So they say that is a refined lineage which combines knowledge and spirituality, pining for Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala, and the desire for jihad, emulating the sunnah and spiritual ecstasy. Sweetness of Iman. This is a lineage that we have. Pining for Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala, desire to give your life jihad in the path of Allah and emulating the Sunnah and spiritual ecstasy. When the Muslims of India got ready to wage jihad against a foreign power in 1857, the rays of this sentiment reached Shamli and Thana Bhawan, where he was residing. Hazrat Haji Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi and Hazrat Hafiz Zamin Shaheed Sahib, Zamin Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, took a group of mujahideen together with Maulana Qasim Sahib Nanuti rahmatullah alayh and Rashid Ahmad Gangohi rahmatullah alayh and proceeded to the battlefield to fight the British. The ulama were in the forefront. The commander of this group was Hazrat Hadi Sahib himself. Was himself. As I mentioned to us one time also, he says, "Hum darte nahi, we're not afraid." He said, "They must come. We'll fill our sleeves also. It's time to give life. We'll give life also. That time now to have a cup of tea." So he was in the forefront. Look what they say. So Hadi Sahib himself was a commander who had never shot a gun in his life. The Thani Rahmatullah Ali says, to have the spirit of giving your life in the path of Allah, what is it that will make you stand? That even a bullet is now flying past you, easy to turn away and run now. Because you don't know where the next bullet is going to come from. He says, this ulama of Dioban, the ulama of the Khankas before, what spurred them on? It was almost like they were sitting in the majlis, like the call came, "Acha, they are chala, but let's go." They will catch the skill. Like they were waiting for it. Asadis are teaching Bukhari and different kitabs. The call came, "Chalo bhai, kitab ban karo." Because the kitabs were going in the battlefield. There was no hesitation. The Thani says, Rahmatullah, he said, "How come? There's no training, no formal training, none. What gave them that level of bravery and courage? But you need to stand in the battlefield. It's easy now, you'll have a little courage if you have the ammunition and armory. But you've got nothing to go and stand there. Alright. So he says, when they fight the nafs now takes the evil head and they make dabao, suppress it. And they fight the nafs. It's like they take the dagger of taqwa and they stab it. So what happens when the heart bleeds that he didn't do the haram, so that blood, spiritual blood, turns into nur ma'rifat. The nur of Allah Ta'ala's ma'rifat and muhabbat. That is stored in the heart. So when something happens against the deen of Allah, then their nur of ma'rifat springs up and lifts them up. They give your life now to preserve the deen of Allah. Allah's deen is going down. Nabi alayhi salatu sunnah are being eradicated. We can't sit now. There's a nur of taqwa. It's not now the gym and formal training. Person can have it, but he'll run for his life. The person has nur of taqwa, he won't run. That's what he says. He never shot a gun in his life. When he fired for the first time, he was overcome by a type of unconsciousness. However, the religious fervor and pride for one's fellow Muslims with which he came onto the battlefield did not permit him to slip in his determination and resoluteness. When the British regained their lost power, they initiated an agenda of persecution. The Hadith Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh immigrated to Makkatul Mukarram. A lot of things happened before that. Alright, a lot of things happened in between also. But then he had to leave and go to Makkatul Mukarramah. Hazrat Maharashid Ahmad Gangohi Rahmatullah Alayhi, who was arrested in 1276. In 1276 Hijri, the Hadith Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi and Maulana Qasim Sahib Nanuti Rahmatullah Alayhi remained in hiding. Imagine what was happening that time. He's in Gaza right now. Persecution started. They had no way to go. Sir Gangohi already was in prison, taken away by them. We can imagine the torture that must have put him through. So they went into hiding. Also remember, ulama ikram, you might think, why they're hiding? They weren't just hiding to save their life. They went into hiding because that too was a sunnah. The Nabi alayhi salatu for 3 days he hid in the ghar of Thawr during hijrah. Whatever they did now was because of some sunnah. The Hadith Sahib Rahmatullah Ali proceeded to the Karachi harbor, from where he boarded the ship to Makkatul Mukarramah. On reaching Makkah Mukarramah, he had to bear many hardships. He used to remain hungry on many occasions. In his first few years, he remained in seclusion in a room in the Ismaili hospice on Mount Safa. There's a hospice over there, so he was there. He spent most of his time in Ibadah. He would occasionally sit with the ulama and Sufis of the city. Sheikh Fanisi Shadili, Sheikh Shazili also is one silsila you find in North Africa. I have a lot of bid'at over there, sihar, witchcraft, some of them do all these things. So Shadili, Sheikh Ibrahim Rashidi and Sheikh Ahmed Dahlan Makki accorded utmost respect to Hazrat Hadith Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. He then moved to a house in Harra. Harra al-Bab area and lived there until his end. It was in 1294-1877 when a few devoted murids bought a house in Harra al-Bab, which they built and gifted to Hazrat Hadi Sahib rahmatullah alayh. He settled down in this house and lived in it until his demise. Okay, then we come to his marriage. Inshallah, we'll continue with this next week, inshallah. But you can understand from the spirit they had in them. That's why Ghazwala said that our ulama and our silsila, all these are Shaykh Kamil. That everything in them wasn't just zikr, they had ilm, they had jihad also. It was a complete syllabus that they had, the burning love of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. Here also we heard before from Miyaji Nur Muhammad Rahmatullah Alayhi. He was the one that they had in his heart, the burning love of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. And together with that, he was a great Amil also. He was a great Amil. So Hazrat Hadi Sahib stayed with him for many years. So before his demise, he called Hazrat Hadi Imdadullah Mahadi Maki Rahmatullah, told him that I'm going now. I can give you one of two things. I can hand over to you from heart to heart the love of Allah, this flame I have in my heart. Or I'll give you my whole army of jinnat. Become a big amil. What do you want? He says that I want what's in your heart. He's ajam. And then they make the mu'anaqah. And we find in Ghara Hira also, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, Jibreel alayhi salatu wasalam came. He told Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, iqra. Read. Ma ana biqari'in. I cannot read. Then what he did, he hugged him. See, he hugged me so tight that I felt the pain on my bones also. Second time he told him again, read, I can't read. Again he hugged him. Then the third time, he says in that hugging, that mu'anaqa, he was transferring the spiritual nur to carry wahi. So three times it happened. But that now is still coming down our akabir. He still have it. My Ilyas Sahib rahmatullah alayh. What level of zikr he was, subhanallah. So before he passed away also, then he called his son. That was mentioned also, that before he decided to make his son the Amir of Tabligh, the final decision was left with the people in the Khanka, the Raipuri Rahmatullah Ali. He said, ask the Raipuri, people in the Khanka, their hearts are clean and zikr of Allah. They got no politics. So tell them to make the decision. So the Raipuri made Mashwara, as the Shaykh Zakariya Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, the Issa Mullah Yusuf Sahib will be the next Amir. Then he called him, he was young, about 24, 25 he was. And he did the same thing, he hugged him. And they had something they could give over. Like how we have now rents and cents, etc., and properties, who we handing. They've got real things in their heart. So he gave it over to him. And he had the capacity also, because there were so many thousand zikrs every day they were making already. So their hearts had the capacity. Like this, now they would transfer from heart to heart. So they say that is one way to transfer. The Talmud has mentioned, Rahmatullah Ali, there's two ways of transferring. The one is like this, where it's a direct transfer. But he says that more than often is temporary. The fuse and barakat of that is temporary if the person who is receiving it doesn't have the capacity. He'll enjoy it for some amount of time. Like one murid asks the Shaykh, Hazrat, make tawajju, please Hazrat. Give it to me. Say, you don't have the capacity. No, please Hazrat, I want it. But you don't have the capacity. Anyway, he persisted. Till the Shaykh said, okay. So he made mu'anaqa with it. He hugged him. But whatever that burn of Allah's muhabbat, he gave it to him. Transferred some of it into his heart. They say that almost immediately his features became like his Shaykh's also. What you call ittihad. Where they become like one. By the third day already his heart couldn't take it. He passed away. It was too heavy. Couldn't carry it. But he wasn't ready for it as yet. So Mashayikh say this direct tawajjuh is sometimes, most of the time, temporary. Doesn't last for long. He says, then how do you get this nisbat? They say, by attending over and over again and sitting in the company of the mashayikh. So slowly rubs. It takes time, but the murid mustn't become impatient. Hey, I'm trying so long, I fell again. Continue. Allah will give it to you sooner or later. Allah will see you persisting. It takes years sometimes. Allah Ta'ala lets you mature into it. Something is mature into it, then it doesn't leave you after that. That is part of you. That one day is permanent. So therefore, there's a long process, but the process also is enjoyable. Sometimes you fall. And Hazrat Ali says, Rahmatullah also, says, remember, nobody is sinless. Even the big mashayikh also, leaving mashayikh, they're our job now to see where they faltered. Now see, you know, they're not ma'asum, they're not sinless, they're not protected from sins. Allah Ta'ala also protect them, Allah protect them. But see, sometimes Allah Ta'ala lets them slip. Let them slip so pride doesn't come into their heart. So pride doesn't come to their heart. You also amongst the normal people. وَقَالَ إِنَّنِي مِنَ الْمُسْلِمِينَ عَمِلَ صَالِحًا. He does good deeds and he says, I'm a simple Muslim. He doesn't regard now because of my taqwa. So Allah lets it happen sometime. And then they make double tawbah on that. And on that now they progress further. So it's a whole process now how to get this nisbat and this connection. Allah Ta'ala give us tawfiq inshaAllah. Thanks. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك